Hello again. Welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo emerged yesterday in Buffalo after 5 days of radio silence to defend his administration's handling of the now-shuttered Moreland Anti-Corruption Commission. It was in direct response to the New York Times report last week that Cuomo's top aide was meddling in the commission's business. That after, our guest today, Ken Lovett, broke the story many months ago. And now State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman is getting dragged into the fray by his opponent in November's election, John Cahill, who's goading him to speak up about it. Despite Cuomo's denial of wrongdoing, coupled with Moreland Commission co-chair William Fitzpatrick's statement that no one was meddling in the commission's investigation, major questions linger, and it's becoming clear that this isn't going to be easily swept under the rug in time for November. Ken Lovett is a columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, widely regarded as the best of the best, and he has extensively covered the situation. Blair Horner, one of our favorites here at WAMC, if not our favorite, is legislative director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, who is always keeping an eye on the Capitol. Very cute. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wmc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. But the most important of all of them, and this is what most people do, it's what I would do at my age, you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. That's voxpop@wamc.org. So, my friends, it's your show. There are two people on the line. We want to hear from you. Can we have a little short synopsis of what gives? First from you, Ken Lovett.
Well, the governor has really, I think, is in the middle of facing his worst crisis in his 4 years in office. This is a story that really has been dogging him since September, that he interfered with the Moreland Commission, that he not only set up but vowed publicly would be independent, that they can look into anything and everything they wanted to, including himself, until they actually started looking at entities that with ties to the governor, and then they were told they couldn't send those subpoenas out. The governor's office, his aides, Larry Schwartz, his secretary to the governor.
That's the top job.
That's the top job. It's like the chief of staff.
Yeah.
He really started dictating which subpoenas could go, which would be held back. Ultimately, after we reported about this in September and October, a lot of those subpoenas did go out, but that was after it was made public.
Yeah. How did you get the story in the first place? Somebody call you up and tell you about it?
Yeah, you know, sourcing different various sources. You know, you had to confirm it, and you know, people were not happy it was going on. Let's just put it that way.
Okay. And Blair Horner, what's your take on all of this?
Well, I think the governor's twisting himself up into a verbal pretzel over this. At first, as Ken mentioned, this was going to be an independent commission that could look at anything. Then it was, well, it couldn't possibly be an independent commission to look at me because that wouldn't pass the laugh test. And then yesterday, it is independent because despite our meddling, they didn't listen to us all the time. And so the governor's spinning like a top on this one, and I think he's having a hard time trying to stay in front of it to the extent that he can.
Well, now, I've always thought that the man is a strategic genius, Machiavellian, in fact, but very smart about that in the way he approaches politics. But I also think that to some degree, he's really created this situation that didn't have to be created. Am I wrong about that?
No, I would agree with that. I mean, I think it's increasingly true that the more he's in public and facing pressure, the more he creates problems for himself. I mean, the argument that somehow the commission was his commission, he could do whatever he want, came out in a Crane's editorial board visit, and then was widely reported. And so I think in those sort of the public circumstances where he's sort of faced with tough questions from particularly the media, I think it sort of throws him off his game. I think he's much better behind closed doors than he is out in front of them.
I also think that I'm not convinced, and I wrote about this today, I'm not convinced he wanted to really investigate the legislature. What he wanted was there was a slate of lawmaker arrests last year in April. And the polls were showing it was starting to affect him, and that they were saying he's not doing enough to to crack down on corruption. So he wanted an ethics package heading into an election year that he could tout that he got. He threatened them for the third time, actually since before he was even governor when he was running, that if we don't get an ethics package, I'm going to do this Moreland. They didn't do it. He was then forced to do the Moreland because he had threatened it so many times. He puts it together. But throughout the process, there was almost like these breaks where he was like, please negotiate something so we can make this go away. They wouldn't do it until the end of March when he got a watered down version of ethics reform. And then it went away. And then all the havoc, began.
I mean, just to pick up on that, I mean, this sort of undermines, I mean, Ken's quite right. I mean, this sort of undermines the theory of him as this political Svengali. Because clearly didn't think it through, pulling in the attorney, having the Moreland commissioners deputize as assistant attorneys general creates more of a headache, as it turns out, for him. And I'm sure we'll talk about it some more. But
why don't you talk about that for 1 second? Because now, in order to investigate the legislature, Cuomo had to go get them deputized by the attorney general's assistant attorney general so that they could go after the legislature, right?
That's essentially right. And now, for the governor to say that it's his commission, when in reality it's not really his, just his commission, it's the attorney general's commission too. And just
who's
like
been silent, hasn't he?
That's right. The Sphinx-like, I think, would be the way to describe it. In terms of...
Well, he has more important things to do, like go after, you know, the people who are renting their apartments in New York City, you know.
I think he's going to be in a tough spot because just like no one would want the governor intervening in, let's say, the Environmental Bureau of the Attorney General's office and telling them to back off against polluters because they're close to the governor. Effectively, if the Times reporting and if Ken's reporting is all true, that is, in fact, what was happening, where the governor's office was telling deputized attorneys general that they couldn't look into certain aspects and they had to pull back on subpoenas that they thought were important.
I think you're both right, except for one thing. I think Cuomo is so powerful and has been where the legislature is concerned. Shelley Silver, that's not Shelley E. Silver, but Shelley Silver and his pal over there on the Republican side, Dean Skelos, that he could probably have had his way. I think Ken's right, but I do think the impression was, and he needed this, that he was going to go after the legislature, even if he didn't want to, which I think he didn't, because just the act of going after them was the political thing to do.
Well, I think what he wanted was to walk the line, which is what he's done really effectively. What made him a really strong governor his first 3 years is what's got him into trouble this time around, which is he wanted to walk the tightrope. He wanted to beat his chest publicly and say, we're going to investigate the legislature. We're going to go wherever the money takes us and find out what's going on. Behind the scenes, he was telling them, look, I'm trying to keep them at bay, but you've got to work with me here. And there's two examples that really didn't get a lot of attention in September when we revealed them, but really should be looked at, which is one, not only did he tell them not to put out subpoenas that were steered toward entities tied to him, but there was a subpoena that they had approved, the commission that was going to go out to both the state and legislative ethics committees. And basically what they were looking for were any complaints over the last 5 years, all complaints about lawmakers. That would have caused a real war with the legislature. And the governor's office said, no, you might not want to put those out. You know, don't put them out. Then after the commission sent letters requesting voluntarily information to the lawmakers on their outside income, Cuomo's people, the legislature basically told them to pound sand. And the commission was like, that's it. We're going to just bury them with subpoenas. Cuomo's people said, well, why don't we take a 2-week break? Let's see if we can negotiate a deal, and then you can subpoena if you need to. So they took a 2-week break, and in an oddity, the commissioners who were investigating were also trying to negotiate a deal with the legislature. It didn't happen. Then the subpoenas ended up going out. So I think the governor did what he could to kind of stem the investigation, the criminal-type investigation, while at the same time beating his chest publicly and saying, look what I'm doing. We're sending 25 prosecutors after them.
And also at the same time, and then we have to take a break, and also at the same time raising almost $50 million in campaign funds. And those were going to be looked at, too. So we'll be right back. So Mark and Roderick and Howard, you stay right where you are, and we'll be right back with you.
So Support for WAMC is from Laurie Stilwell CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StilwellCPA.com. Washington County Tourism, featuring cultural activities throughout Washington County, including museums, historic sites, trails, talks, and presentations. WashingtonNYCounty.com. The Honest Wade Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Avenue in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. HonestWade.coop. And Williamstown Theater Festival, Williamstown, Massachusetts, presenting Cheetah Riviera and Roger Reese in Candor and Ebb musical The Visit, directed by John Doyle, July 31st through August 17th, WTFestival.org.
And sitting in this corner is Blair Horner, and over here is Ken Lovett, and we're delighted to have you guys with us. You guys are the best of the best. Let's go to Mark in Schenectady. Okay, Mark in Schenectady, you're on. What do you got to say for yourself?
Hey, Alan. I find it interesting because the Cuomo has walked the fine line. He's a bully, but that's just my personal opinion, and I am a Democrat, and I voted for him the first time. He does this in relation to unions and other things in the past, where it's either his way or the highway. And I think in this instance, he tried to do something, and when legislation didn't go his way, he decided to make himself look good with the Moreland Commission. And then when it didn't go his way, he tried to aggressively stop it. And I just find this governor, I feel he has two faces. I feel that, you know, he says one thing and then he turns around and does another. I'm really disappointed in our governor right now.
And I got a question here. Mark, I got it. Now, let me ask you a question real fast. Considering your antipathy in this case, you've got the governor and you've got Rob Astorino and you've got a couple of, you know, people on the left. What would you do in a coming election?
Well, in relation, if I was the governor, or if I was
Mark, and you're in the voting booth.
If I'm me,
yeah.
I'm obviously going to not vote for the governor in this election.
But and would you vote for the Republican?
I might vote Republican, and I must tell you, Alan, that I've been an activist, and I've been a diehard Democrat forever, and I just feel that in this case, we did not, the stripes of the governor are not where they claim to be.
Okay, we got that part. This is good. I'm just trying to get to everybody, and I hope you understand that, Mark. But one last question. Would you vote against him in the primary, for example, for Zephyr Truthout?
Most definitely. And I don't even know the opponent, but I would definitely vote for him.
Well, you can go on WAMC.org and listen to her, okay? Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
Okay.
1-800-348-2551. You guys want to say anything about what you just heard?
I think it's interesting that Democrats are really, the governor's style is, in a way, is catching up with them. I mean, I think one thing this has shown us is that what he's been doing pretty effectively behind the scenes, you know, and his style behind the scenes, his aggressive, I'll say, I don't know if I'll use the word bully, but his aggressive style is now public debt for everyone, and it's been laid bare for everyone to see.
Blair?
No, I mean, the one cautionary note I would just, for all of the listeners here, is this hasn't played out yet.
No.
There's other shoes to fall. There may be stories where somehow these two sort of seemingly parallel conversations about, on the one hand, people saying they were feeling pressure to do pullback subpoenas, the governor's people saying, well, that it wasn't the case, we're just trying to be helpful, that somehow there's a rationale behind these two things that will make some sense. So, again, I mean, I'll be as harsh a critic as this governor as I am any other governor, but in terms of just sort of seeing how it's going to play out, there's still more to come, I think.
Well, I think at the very least, he's been damaged. You know, his image as wrapping himself up in the mantle of reform has been damaged. You know, that's the very least. And at the worst is if Parit Bharara delivers an indictment to him or some who work for him.
Now, if he's perceived by some as aggressive, as you said before, as a bully, as we our caller just said, you know, I've seen this before, and people get scared of people who are aggressive or bullies. And then when the mantle comes off, hell hath no fury. People really
They pounce.
Really, really pounce because they didn't like being cowards and being under the thumb of, you know, somebody. So it's tough.
But you, how you know he's still powerful,
oh my God,
is that all the comments or a lot of the comments about him are still anonymous. Oh, when yeah. you start seeing names attached to it from lawmakers and things yeah. like that, you'll know.
We see it all the time. Okay, Roderick and Troy. 1-800-348-2551. Go ahead, Roderick.
Yes. My question is for Mr. Lovett chiefly, but also for Mr. Horner and Mr. Shartok. It deals with something a few years ago when Cuomo was Attorney General relating to his relations with Stephen Ratner, the Wall Street investment banker who arranged the bailout of General Motors. They were investigating something. I don't recall exactly what it was. It was some operations of Ratner that were very questionable. And an investigation was started, and Cuomo seemed very aggressive in pursuing it, and there were even reports, I recall, of his beginning to prepare a prosecution. And then suddenly the case was dropped, and it was settled out of court to the satisfaction of everyone. Does Mr. Lovett know anything about this? Because the follow-up in the New York Times, maybe I should have read the Daily News, was not very complete.
Okay, here we go. We're going, Roderick, we're going to go to Ken Lovett first.
What happened was the then Attorney General Andrew Cuomo had launched a 4-year investigation into a massive pay-to-play scandal within the state pension fund. Steve Ratner did get caught up in that. Basically, he, you know, as you said, they were going after him aggressively. In the end, as Cuomo's term was ending, they wanted to wrap up the investigation, and they hit him pretty hard. He didn't get off easy. Like a lot of people, he didn't necessarily get prosecuted, but he agreed to give, I think it was $11 million, something like that, in a fine, and they took away his license to actually work in the stock market for, you know, 5 years or 6 years. Don't hold me to the numbers here, but he got hit pretty hard in
the
settlement.
Yeah, but that's not pounding stone.
No,
I mean,
not,
you know.
No,
maybe.
But you know, I mean, Hevesy went to jail in that investigation. Hank Morris went to jail in that investigation. Everyone else either pled out or came to civil settlements. And Ratner paid not the biggest, but one of the biggest settlements.
Uh-huh. And Blair?
I mean, I certainly don't have anything to add to what Ken said. I mean, certainly he's on top of the facts on this thing. I mean, again, we don't know what the prosecutors do know, and so how complicit Ratner was in this process is, of course, not entirely clear. He does plead out, as Ken mentioned. He pays a big fine, so clearly he had some level of guilt, but again, we don't know exactly what the deal was with him.
And that was ugly, I should add. They fought bitterly, those two sides.
Let me just remind everybody the telephone number is 1-800-348-2551. I want to hear from you because this is your program. Okay, Roderick, thank you very much. Let's go to Howard in New Paltz. Howard, you're on. Howard.
Are you? Oh, hi. I have a question that doesn't relate to the governor, but it does in a way, about smart meters. And if they can actually force you to have a smart meter on your home.
We don't know about this. We're going to pass on that because we don't know. And since we don't know, it's always best to say we don't know. Something that one learns early in life if one is good about it. Thank you, Howard. Appreciate it very much. Okay, so now everybody has 100% chance.
Although Howard could check with the Public Service Commission and find out technically what the details are with regard to smart meters for himself, yes.
Yeah, that's good. Hey, while we were talking about this, you worked for the Attorney General for a little while, didn't you?
Yes.
For Andrew Cuomo, what'd you do for him?
My title was Special Advisor on Policy and Public Integrity, mm-hmm. and I was involved in a lot of different projects. The main thing was to create something called Project Sunlight, which was a way for the public to run simultaneously separate databases, contracts, campaign contributions, member items, legislation, so that people could look to investigate all elected officials at the state level to see if there were any connections between what they did and where they raised the money.
Are you satisfied with the way it all came out?
I was satisfied with the way it turned out by the time that I left because I'm not a technical person. I'm an old guy. And it moved to the level.
You don't
level
know what old is.
and it moved to the level of fairly high-level technical involvement I was happy with that we got it out and kicked out the door within a year. And I was happy that there was additional funding for it in that year's budget, but it was moved now to the level where sort of the technocrats take over. And I was disappointed that the public doesn't use it, frankly, as much as I thought.
Well, what did you think? I mean, you know, okay, so you left after about a year, right?
Yeah, a little over a year.
Did you leave because you weren't happy with...
No, the project was done. It seemed like a good time to go. And
I've been after Blair on this for about...
I know. It's the same answer every time, though, you know,
now.
Because it's the truth.
One of these days it's going to slip out.
I enjoyed my time there. The people there were great. I had a great experience, and it was a fun project.
Yeah. So I was fascinated, Ken Lovett, about, you know, the idea that people pick up the phone and call you at the Daily News and tell you things. You know, I mean, that seems to me you have to earn their trust in order to get that, because there are a lot of reporters they could call, but they call you. And that must be pretty satisfying.
Yeah, I mean, that's the name of the game. I've been doing this a long time. I mean, professionally, 26 years. And
whoa.
You
don't look 26.
But, you know, you have your reputation, and that's what you try to do. You try to treat people fairly. You try to protect sources if they need protecting, and you try to write accurate stories that make a difference.
Okay, and we'll go to Gene in Albany. All right, Gene, you're on.
Hi. I'm appreciating this show very much. And with Andrew Cuomo, I think he's done some good things. But in general, as a registered Democrat, I'm very unhappy with him. And the Moreland Commission problem has pushed me over the edge.
How far over the edge?
Well, we have an alternative now for governor. And any registered Democrat can go research Zephyr Teachout, find out about her. She's intelligent. She has integrity. I think she's a fine option. I think Andrew Cuomo needs to go take a rest.
Do either of you guys know, Ken or Blair, whether there's been a poll on how Zephyr is doing against Cuomo?
I asked you that.
I know that there have been a lot of polls with Astorino, but there hasn't been anything with Zephyr in the primary.
No, they haven't done that one yet. And partly, perhaps, A, it's hard to do the general primary, but also she's not on the ballot yet. They're challenging her, and they may toss her from the ballot.
Do you think that's a mistake on Andrew's case, if I may call him that?
Well, I mean, if they toss her off the ballot, it may not be. If she ends up staying on the ballot and he just looks like and sort of a bully going after an opponent in what should be a Democratic process, big and small D, then it could come back to bite him. But if she gets tossed and there's no alternative— Yeah, you know, people like Gene here from Albany won't have an alternative in September.
And the irony is not to be cynical, of course.
I'm cynical.
But,
I'm very cynical.
But while they're going after Teachout, they're letting Randy Credico, who is a Democratic activist and a comedian down in the city, who they don't really see as a threat at all compared to Teachout, not that they think she could win, but they're leaving him on the ballot, and you got to wonder, well, why won't they go after him? Because as long as he has a primary, he can raise more money that way, rather than just getting the, whatever it is, $40-something thousand from each donor, he can now get another $17,000-$18,000 because he has a primary.
Isn't that interesting? You see, well, you learn something on the Vox Pop every day.
And it splits the protest vote. I mean, to the extent that he gets any votes, it's probably going to come out of Teachout's total, not out of the governor's.
So how cynical, you know, I just have to respond to what Ken said about my cynicism, or you said, Blair.
I said realism.
Yeah, okay, but here's the deal. So he tries to get Zephyr Teachout kicked off the ballot, says she didn't live where she was supposed to live, but she says she did, but that she sent some money to Obama from her mother's address one time, and that's what they're basing their whole thing on. So now it'll go to the Board of Elections, and then after the Board of Elections, it'll go to the courts, right? Because if she gets kicked off by the hacks on the Board of Elections, did I say that?
I said realistic.
Then the next question is whether the courts, you know, many of whom have been supported by the governor or appointed by the governor, whether the courts take the fall also for Cuomo and do what he wants.
Well, I don't know. The judges aren't exactly happy with the governor these days. Don't forget they wanted to extend the retirement age, and he really, you know, behind the scenes killed that.
So he could appoint more of his own.
So he could appoint more of his own. So, You know, I can't imagine the judiciary is very happy with him. He's also cut their budget.
And it is an opportunity for the governor's, his allies in the state Democratic Party to send like the goons out with the placards attacking Teach Out at our news conferences. So you keep stirring the pot on that. There's some controversy. Maybe people think about Teach Out differently as a result of this. So, but my guess is that at some point it'll be the ABC vote for some Democratic activists.
We had a letter today from somebody who said, how come WAMC never mentions Teach Out? Well, first of all, you're hearing all about it right now. And second of all, we've had her on our statewide Capital Connection show not once, but twice. So there, take that. Okay. So Gene, thanks for the call. Appreciate it a lot.
Well, keep your antenna up on Teach Out. I think she's going to be in the Albany area on Thursday. The details will be coming.
Okay, Gene, thank you. Let's go to Lee in Ulster. Welcome back, Lee. You're on.
I have two questions. One is, I've read quite a few articles lately that have spoken to political commentators' astonishment that Cuomo has not had anything to say about the bridge scandal. About the problem in Jersey. He seems to be completely dropped out of that scene.
I think that's a great point, Lee.
Well, let's stick with that one then. Is there a comment? Do you fellas have anything to say about that?
Anybody want to go first?
Well, I think, he has been quiet. Don't forget, there's a federal investigation into it. The governor, Cuomo and Christie jointly control it. He hasn't said much. I don't know if that's out of deference. Most of this stuff so far has really been at Christie, and it seems that it's involved the New Jersey side. The port has really been split in its management, the Jersey side and the New York side. This really seems to involve the Jersey side, and while the governor may know more than he's letting on, all the focus is there, so he's letting it go. Christie, on the other hand, has been very quiet about the governor and his problems. But
more
also
than quiet, he's been almost endorsed him.
Well, right. And last week he raised a lot of eyebrows when on Monday, he was in Connecticut campaigning for a Republican gubernatorial candidate. And he was asked, well, are you going to go in and campaign for Rob Astorino in New York? And he said, no. He said, not at this moment. We don't support losing candidates. Right. And a lot of people were surprised at that. And then even after the stuff broke with in the Times, on reigniting the controversy over Moreland, he still stuck by his guns and said, no, we don't do losing candidates.
And it's interesting is the one of the initial whistleblowers on the whole issue of the Bridgegate scandal was the New York appointee,
yes.
Patrick Foy. And so it makes you think that perhaps there is more to be told on the New York side than we've heard about.
We've heard
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Is it possible that any of this has to do with diminishing Clinton's potential strength because Cuomo has aspirations?
Well, I think it's undoubtedly Cuomo has aspirations, but he's told a lot of us over the years that he cannot run for president if Hillary is running. Remember, he was a cabinet secretary in the Clinton administration. That's another whole story we could talk about someday. I doubt very much he thinks that he can do that. Although, Lee, now that you mention it, his father was always very good at, saying things about other Democrats like Walter Mondale. Was it Mondale he said it was like polenta? Was that Mondale? Yeah. He said, he's a very strong candidate like polenta, which was described in the newspapers as a hearty or a weak breakfast food, Italian breakfast food. So
almost tasteless.
I have to say, Alan, that on this one I'm still, it's such an opportunity for Cuomo to diminish a potential Republican candidate, and he just refuses to step to the line and do it.
Which Republican? You mean
Christie?
Christie. I mean, look, he also has a relationship with Christie. They do get along well. Not that that means anything in politics, but they have dinner together. They have joint projects together. I don't think he's looking to have a border war right now, and one that would explode into the national. I don't think he has seen a reason to draw blood on Christie.
Well, and it's in the lap of the U.S. attorney, right? Yeah. I mean, at a certain level, it's
both sides,
similar to
both
the
New Jersey
right?
side,
so,
New York side.
Right. So there's not a whole lot you can do until you see what hand the U.S. attorney's office is playing.
Well, that's true. Hey, Lee, as always, great stuff. Appreciate it.
It was wonderful. Thank you very much,
okay.
Gentlemen.
Jim, you stay there. We'll be back in about 7 seconds.
Support for WAMC comes from Dr. Jonathan Sumber, podiatrist, Kingston, a second-generation practice focusing on family foot problems. Laser treatment available, 845-331-0601. Southern Vermont Arts Center, Manchester, Vermont. Brian Sweetland's Nature, A Vermont Artist's Journey. Opening reception August 2nd, svac.org. Foresight Land Services, for over 45 years, offering civil engineering, land surveying, planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York. ForesightLand.com. And the Digital Berkshire Eagle, an online newspaper for news and information of the Berkshires and beyond. NoInkyFingers.com.
And we are back. This is so much fun for me. I got to tell you, I'm really enjoying this discussion.
It gives your listeners some sense of what you find fun, Alan. I mean, it's sort of scary when you think about it.
Well, no, I mean, you know, we're getting down to the bottom of the last call from Lee, for example, in Ulster. I thought that was a great call because we don't know what goes on at the Port Authority. No, I mean, there's a lot of secrecy there. We don't know who's calling in the plays and what they are and why. You know, one could ascribe all kinds of motives to Cuomo. You know, doesn't want to get into a fight with him. He's his friend. Those are the benign ones. And then there's other stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to Jim in Malta. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You will get in after Jim. Okay. Jim, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
I was just wondering, and I agree with Alan that a few times he's mentioned on the show in the morning, that probably the best thing Governor Cuomo has done is get the SAFE Act passed. And I agree. I think the National Rifle Association and the gun lobby is one of the most dangerous organizations in America. But last fall, most, if not all, of the sheriffs running upstate, I know for sure in Essex, Warren, and Saratoga, either said they wouldn't enforce it or they would selectively enforce it. And I'm just wondering, has the SAFE Act been enforced? And if not, did Cuomo just want to get the bill passed to show the nation that he could be quick and get a strict gun law passed and really isn't that interested in making sure it works?
How do we really know about his motives? I mean, you have to have a periscope to go into his brain to figure that out. But it is interesting. Your point is well taken, Jim, that he did it right after Connecticut.
Well, and we know, and I know from talking to legislators, he wanted it to be the first. He was pushing very hard. It got passed in January after Newtown was December 13th, mm-hmm. and it got passed in January. But he had been pushing hard to get it done before Christmas. And there were a lot of talks, and he really wanted it done soon. He wanted to beat Obama. And you know, he basically told the lawmakers, I want to get this done soon. I want to get this done soon. And he got it done right out of the gate. And we know not a lot of major legislation gets done right out of the gate.
Which, by the way, is why I have always maintained that Cuomo had tremendous power over the members of both houses of the legislature. So when people tell me on the ethics thing that he couldn't get it done, he had to threaten them and all the rest of it, I like your answer to that, Ken. He didn't want to get it done. I say if he had gone to Skelos and say, you're going to be in the minority at that moment, and to Sheldon Silver, not Sheldon E. Silver, but Sheldon Silver, and asked him and told him, listen, you don't want to fight with me, because I don't think he does, you know, knowing Shelley Silver the way I do. I think he could have had anything he wanted.
Or a good portion. Look, the truth is that the SAFE Act really was the last straw for a lot of the Republicans. Once they pass the SAFE Act, and as far as enforcement, we don't know because they won't give us numbers on how many people are registering, things like that. So we don't know what the enforcement
basic
is.
Basic information that should be available.
And they won't make it. But once he did the SAFE Act, and don't forget redistricting was out of the way at that point, the Republicans realized that they have to start acting like Republicans again. They let same-sex marriage go to the floor for a vote. They let this go to the floor. And for a lot of their base, the SAFE Act was the last straw.
Yeah, but did they want to be in the minority is the question.
No, but that's why. So what did they start doing? They started blocking all the rest of the progressive legislation since the SAFE Act. And that, I'm not sure with redistricting out of the way, which would have put them in the minority had they done an independent,
right.
Then I think they got a backbone.
Yeah, well,
That's right. I mean, the point, though, that we don't know what's going on with the SAFE Act is really this important thing, because there's no reason why the public should know this, and yet the information, basic information on what's actually happening with the program is not being made publicly
available.
But the
national polls do show a tremendous surge for people wanting something done about guns. So, I mean, this is a smart guy, Cuomo.
Right.
He looks at those polls, he looks at his presidential ambitions, and he says, okay, I want to be the first, which you mentioned, and I want to be there. I want to be able to say I tried to do something about this, because surely we're going to have more of these kinds of things happening.
I mean, he's a master of multidimensional chess. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the marriage equality issue, the SAFE Act, were both very complicated bills, politically and substantively, to get done. And that's what makes the Moreland thing seem sort of crazy at a certain level, that they didn't think it through. They didn't take it seriously enough, I think, early on. They didn't think it would blow up in their face. And now they're spinning around. And this is, you know, clearly shows they're human. This is a big mistake.
Okay, let's go to thank you very much for
that. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, let's go to Eli in Utica. Eli, you're on.
Hi. William Fitzpatrick, district attorney, Onondaga County, co-chairman of the Moreland Commission, a real hard-nosed Republican, came out yesterday and absolved Cuomo of all tampering claims. He says it didn't exist. Is he lying? Or is he in Cuomo's pocket? What's going on?
Well, I think he also has had a couple of different kind of answers, Fitzpatrick. He had said when I first wrote the stories back in September that, you know, we got advice from the governor's team, input. That's not unusual, but we were independent. Then in the New York Times story, he indicated, well, there was a, they were upset at one point with, and they added in emails that they were upset with what they felt was interference, and they, and you know, people were threatening to quit. And then yesterday, interestingly enough, 2 hours before the governor resurfaces after 5 days of silence to take questions, Fitzpatrick puts out this statement that basically the governor relied on during his 40-minute Q&A with the reporters. And, you know, my first thought was, what better way to show that you're not controlling the Moreland Commission than to have one of the co-chairs put out a statement 2 hours before your press?
And remember who he chose. I mean, he chose those co-chairs, didn't he?
He did. He chose them.
So, well, I mean, whether or not Fitzpatrick is lying, of course, you know,
we don't know that.
There's no way for us to know. The Times story.
What does a bone crunching sound like?
The Times story has him quoted in emails and stuff internally, where he was very unhappy with the way that the administration was pushing them around. So
and there's a famous quote in which he says, have to learn that we're independent with a capital independent.
That's right. Now, again, this may get into, as I mentioned earlier, these two seemingly parallel universes actually somehow come together. It may be that one person's interpretation of pressure is another person's interpretation of advice. That being said, at the end of the day, this thing turns on what Preet Bharara does, not in what anybody else writes in the newspapers or anything else. It's what Bharara does, anything, if he does anything.
And the fact that Fitzpatrick is saying what he's saying and three other commissioners backed him up helps the governor, and especially makes it harder on Bharara, I would think, to be able to prove some of this stuff.
Well, it's one thing to say something in the press. It's another when you're sitting up in front of the grand jury.
Yep.
That's right. And you're under oath.
Yeah. Okay. And John wrote us, when will people come to the conclusion, as Ralph Nader has often said, that at all levels of our government, we have Republicrats and Demopublicans. They are cut from the same corporate financed cloth. Why not give Howie Hawkins a look? We had Howie Hawkins on just the other day on the Capital Connection program. Okay. And Eli.
Let me throw a quick question at you. One quickie. You guys are more familiar with New York politics, certainly, than most of us. What does Patrick have to gain? I mean, he's totally independent. He's been elected for year after year after year. He's Republican. Onondaga County. Cuomo can't touch him. What does he have to gain by backing Cuomo? I mean you're sort of implying that I heard Alan make the remark, knuckle crunching. I mean, what's he got to lose?
Who knows? I mean, we don't know.
It's also reputation.
Yeah.
You know, do you want to be known as the co-chair of a commission that was, you know, and you're an independent prosecutor that was manhandled by the governor's office? Probably not.
Yeah.
We won't know his motivations. I mean, he's an elected official in the state of New York, and the governor's king.
Okay, Eli, that's enough for you.
Okay, fellas.
Let's go to John in New Paltz. John in New Paltz, let's go.
Yeah, I was just wondering, full disclosure, I'm a member of the teachers union, so I'm not really very fond of Cuomo these days. I was wondering, though, what you thought this scandal said in sort of a larger national context. You were touching on it with the last caller in relation to campaign finance laws and how candidates really are beholden to their donors and when these things manifest here in New York. What do you think that says in the larger context? I'm going to hang up and listen to
you. No. Don't go away. Go ahead, Ken.
Okay.
He was pointing to me.
Oh. Sorry.
When you read the articles,
yeah,
it's pretty clear the campaign contributions are part of the mix in terms of the story. There's a specific part in the Times story, I don't remember if Ken had it or not, where the Real Estate Board of New York is actually talking about bundling campaign contributions in an effort to impact legislation. Now, we all know that that happens, but when you put it in writing and it shows up in a news article, that's bad. And there
it's against the law, right? Bundling.
You're allowed to bundle,
yes.
But you're not allowed to make a donation on someone else's behalf.
Right.
But under New York law, you don't have to disclose it or anything. But it sort of raises the issue of what was Rebney up to, the Real Estate Board of New York, which represents the land interest, the real estate interest in New York City. And they were a big player in the Committee to Save New York, which the governor had organized to lobby on his behalf in the first few years of his administration. So what was the issue there? I mean, that's an interesting question. Your caller is asking about what does it mean for campaign finance reform. I think it just some of what has been reported raises the stench that some of this was being done. Campaign contributions were being raised in an effort to influence what decisions were being made. Now, there's no evidence that ties anybody to any wrongdoing based on these articles. But I'm sure the U.S. Attorney's Office will be looking at that.
Ken, you want to jump in?
Well, I think, campaign fund was a big issue that they were looking into, the ties. As a matter of fact, one of the first few subpoenas that went out went to real estate interests who there were a bunch of developers, five developers, who got a sweetheart tax break that was kind of buried in a broader housing bill. And the commission sent out subpoenas, some of their first subpoenas, to these developers with the idea of let's see about what contributions they gave and, gave to the legislator. But what they didn't know at the time, or, wasn't public at the time, was that several of those developers gave very big contributions to the governor at the time he was going to sign the bill and just after he signed the bill. I reported that, and then shortly after that, that's when the interference began. I mean, a lot of this had to do with how money is raised, influence of money in the system. That's what the governor said he wanted to look at. One of the problems with the commission is, though, he put on all these sitting DAs who have to raise money through the same system. So one of the co-chairs, Kathleen Rice, was something like the fourth largest donor, according to New Nyberg, fourth largest recipient of donations in the state, and she's a DA. She also used the LLC's loopholes to raise more than the regular.
The LLC loopholes, they become corporations.
Right, and it allows you to skirt the donation limit on corporations because they can create their own subsidiaries and basically give unlimited amounts that way.
Yeah, the original pitch was that to look at the State Board of Elections, which is an executive agency, and that was the way to look at the campaign finance connections. And what the governor was pushing for, ostensibly, was campaign finance reform, both at the end of 2013 and 2014.
Why would a guy who is going to go into this election with $50 million want really, really want campaign
finance? Well, he wasn't talking about campaign finance reform for this election cycle other than for the comptroller. The campaign contribution thing was going to be somewhere down the road, 2020, when he was long gone.
In the White House. Okay, so thank you very much for that, John. And we'll go to Cheryl in Westchester. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. You could be the last voice. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Okay, all right. I'm glad you mentioned DiNapoli in that little piece because that came to mind during your last conversation. I have a petty kind of thing. This is I've listened to Cuomo talking, and he seems to acknowledge that somebody made suggestions, quote unquote. If his top aide, Larry Schwartz, was making suggestions, I have an opinion of him from living in Westchester and when he worked for Spano. He doesn't make suggestions. He orders people to do stuff.
Well, no, he's a tough guy.
He's not a gentle guy. He's somebody who's very much like Cuomo. So has anybody talked about this, or have you, do you guys know anything more than we outside of the loop might know or hear anything
else about
operations?
Well, let's go to Ken. Ken.
No, I mean, Larry Schwartz's name has been in the middle of this whole thing. I mean, we've reported, the Times reported that, you know, he basically was the one saying, hold these, these subpoenas at bay. In one case, a subpoena went out to an ad buying firm that was tied to the governor, but also the state party that was running ads promoting the governor's agenda. It was Schwartz who said, get that subpoena back. And they did. Ultimately, again, after I reported about that, it went out. Mm-hmm. But no, Schwartz is definitely in the middle of this. And again, I agree with Blair, whether he did anything criminal. I mean, you know, if he said, we don't think, you know, you don't put those out, and then ultimately they did, I'm not quite sure what's there. And that's what the governor's argument was. They didn't listen to us anyway. Now, granted, they didn't listen after they got caught, but nonetheless, they didn't listen.
No, they didn't listen all the time. Yeah. Schwartz is the tough guy in the administration, and in the administration, the tough guys. It's also hard to believe that Schwartz would be acting independently of the governor when it comes to making these sorts of recommendations,
which makes me want to raise a question with you guys. If the heat gets big enough, and really hot enough, we've seen this before in other cases, if people go before grand juries and names are named and all the rest of it, could the governor fire Schwartz based on the fact that, you know, he may know too much?
Well, I don't think you fire someone because he knows so much. Sometimes that's
why
you keep him around. No, if Larry Schwartz is in trouble, could he cut ties? Certainly. But I don't think we're at that point right now. I don't think there's enough out there at this point where that seems like that's going to happen.
I mean, Christie unloaded his top leadership as the heat got turned up on him, too. So in terms of, but again, it depends on the circumstances, right? I mean, all we know so far are newspaper articles. We don't really know anything else yet besides that.
That's all you need to know.
Particularly the Daily News.
Anything else there, Cheryl?
No, I see, because I felt too that it was like a parallel with Christie absent a bridge. I mean, we don't have something spectacular. We have the Moreland Commission.
You know, I don't know. I think Schwartz, what do I know? But I think Schwartz is very close to this governor. Very close.
Yeah.
And I think there was some separation between Christie and the people who were reporting to him that we don't really know about it. At least that's the way it looks now in terms of what
the administrations in both states are very similar. I mean, the governors in both states are very hands-on.
Yeah.
People don't make independent decisions in either state house without checking with the governor or the governor's office, depending on the level of the decision. And so it's always hard to believe that somehow people are acting independently.
And if they have to go, they go quietly. And if they do it right, they get taken care of, you know, somewhere else.
Of course they get. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that even Danya Perry, who was the chief investigator of the Moreland Commission, who was at odds with the executive director, Regina Calcaterra, who a lot of people on the commission thought was a plant by the governor, who whatever happened, all the stuff went through Calcaterra right back to the governor. Danya Perry just landed a job after she quit in February out of frustration over interference, according to those close to her. She landed a job with Steve Cohn, who used to be Cuomo's top advisor for 5 years, 4 years in the attorney general's office, one in the governor. I mean, she landed
Reform is wonderful.
Yeah, reform is great.
Okay.
It's true.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very
much. All right.
Much.
Go on. Okay. Bye.
And thank you, Ken Lovett, and thank you, Blair Horner. You guys are great. I love the fact that you both came and made the time to do this. I know you're both very busy, so thank you for doing it.
Anytime.
Yeah. So I want to thank and somebody's calling now, but it's too late. I want to thank everyone who called in. I also want to thank Ken Lovett of the Daily News, Blair Horner of NYPIRG for joining us in the studio. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Mohonk Preserve New Paltz with a summer calendar of weekly group hikes, volunteer fairs, classes, public programs, and special events. MohonkPreserve.org/events for information, and readmedia.com. Read Media supporting Berkshire Country Day School, Stockbridge, Massachusetts, is an independent school serving students in preschool through grade 9 since 1946, BerkshireCountryDay.org. unusual wedding rings and more in Crawford Square, North Street, downtown Pittsfield, featuring a variety of jewelry specializing in repair, remodeling, and recycling. 413-236-9300. And Godfrey Financial Associates, Godfrey Financial Associates, Latham, New York, providing retirement planning and wealth management services for baby boomers and beyond. Independent, women-owned, or I should say woman-owned, established 1995, GodfreyFinancial.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at WAMC.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Mike Allinger. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.